Blog Talk Radio.
Conservative Talk. My name is Tracy.
And I'm just plain Bill.
And we're here to give you another taste of conservative point of view from a pancake evening.
A pancake. I like pancakes.
You know what today is, don't you?
Pancake Day?
Shrove Tuesday.
Trove Tuesday.
Shrove Tuesday.
I'm sure that has significance somehow.
It's the night before Mardi Gras.
Oh, very good. All right. I thought that was Fat Tuesday.
They call it that, too.
Oh, okay. See, now if you'd said Fat Tuesday, I would have known what you were talking about.
Is it Ash Wednesday's next week?
I guess. I don't know.
I don't know when Mardi Gras is or any of that other good stuff is. I just know that tonight I went out and had pancakes.
Oh, cool.
For dinner. Pancakes and sausage and applesauce. And everybody was wearing necklaces.
Ooh.
You know, I'm just the driver. I just go where I'm told to go.
Yeah, right. Okay, sure. All the way up there in Wisconsin, and you guys do that, huh? Okay, fine.
It was at our old church. CJ was all excited to go see all the old people that we used to know.
How cool.
It was nice. It was a nice, you know, I haven't seen most of those people in, you know, going on 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I left and sent them a big letter that said, "You guys are a bunch of idiots." You know, so not like I burned a few bridges.
Oh well.
You know, there's a distinction between having a group of people that are really nice mm-hmm. and a community that stinks. You know, and there is that distinction. It's, you know, when individually people are nice, but when they get into a group, they just don't behave well. And I don't mean badly. They just don't behave as if you would expect them to do so.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like politicians, you know. Our individual congressman might be really good. You send them to Washington, and they just do stupid shit.
It's in the water.
In the water. Something's in there. Something's
yeah,
in there.
Or
put
the
a
air
whole lot of
something.
People. Put a whole lot of people together that are supposed to be doing things in your best interest, and no such thing happens.
Yep, I agree. Well, and I, you know, Birch Bayh today, or not today, but recently, basically said the same thing.
Right. That's where I was kind of going. You know, it was Evan Bayh. It was Birch Bayh's son.
Oh, yeah, right.
Who has suggested he will not run for re-election come November. Senator
mm-hmm.
from Indiana.
Right.
Who said that he was leaving because there was no bipartisanship in Washington.
Hmm.
You know, I don't recall him, you know, telling Harry Reid that he needs to do more reaching out across the aisle.
No, I don't remember that either.
You know, I don't recall him saying we need more Republicans into this mix going on.
Yeah.
So I don't know what bipartisanship he's looking for, but it wasn't the kind that involved Republicans.
It certainly wasn't. It certainly wasn't.
You know, maybe he was talking about he wanted more bipartisanship between the leftist loons and the moderate, you know, lefties, you know, in the Democratic Party, but he certainly wasn't talking about the Dems and the GOP.
No, he was not.
So bye-bye, Evan.
Yeah.
You know, see you later, dude. Now, the interesting thing about that is I don't think anybody thought that he was going to lose in November.
The at least published polls, I don't know about his internal polls, but his published polls would not have seemed to indicate that, particularly given he's got $13 million on hand right now.
Right. So, and no particular fight against him at this particular point. I just, it just didn't make sense to me. There has to be something else going on there. And, of course, somebody else said, what's her name? Where is she from, McCarsky? McCarsky?
McCloskey?
Maryland?
No.
Anyways, apparently she hasn't done anything worse than 60% of the vote at any one point, and nobody's up there and there, but somebody suggested that she might be getting out. The question is, are the Democrats seeing something even worse than even anybody else is thinking, that this is not going to be, a blowout, this is going to be, a massacre, a slaughter?
It's possible. That is truly possible.
We were talking about 40 being a big move. We've joked, you and I on this show have joked about 100, and all of a sudden I don't think that there's a whole lot of people joking about 100 at this point in the house.
Yeah, me either.
And of course nobody was thinking. Well, I said what? There was a possibility of pulling 8 or 9 out of it in the Senate?
What did I say?
Is that what I said?
Yeah, it was something close to that.
Let me go back here and see. Because, I have to keep track of these things, otherwise,
That's right. They get lost in antiquity.
Yeah. I said, if the economy improves, 4 in the Senate. If not, 6 in the Senate. So I said there was a possibility of 6 in the Senate if things don't improve. Well, apparently, at this particular point in time, there's every possibility of getting 9.
Yeah.
If everything goes the GOP way, they could actually come up with 9.
I think it could be more than that. But anyway.
Well, at this point, I think what they'd have to do is they'd have to you'd have to have some more senators bailing out and opening the door. Bai left the Democrats in a whole shitload of trouble in Indiana.
Oh, yeah, they did. You betcha.
Do you know if she made it her goal today?
What?
The only announced Democrat for the Senate seat in Indiana was a little-known woman who was working at trying to get enough signatures on her petitions. She had to have something like 1,000 more signatures a day.
No. At least the reports are that she did not.
So, in which case, the Democrats get to actually hand-pick their candidate.
Yes, they do. Well, through the caucus thing. But that's got some pitfalls for them.
It is, if nobody wants to actually throw their hat in the ring at this point.
Well, and even beyond that, I mean, that caucus system is ripe for outsiders to come in and to exert their will.
Ooh, are you suggesting that there could be some hanky-panky going on?
Oh, I would never suggest anything like that.
Maybe I'll go down to Indiana for a while.
Yeah.
it's not that far from my parents' house. Half hour up over the road.
There you go. Caucuses often give you folks that you would not expect. Now, sometimes they give you folks that you do expect, but if somebody doesn't have their ground game on, and with Evan bowing out, I'm guessing nobody's got their ground game on.
No one expected to have to.
Exactly. That's a possibility.
I would suggest to you that there's that probably, and everybody's suggesting that there are a few more in the wings waiting to go.
I think so. And that doesn't even count – the ones that are in trouble and don't know it. Barbara Boxer is one.
Well,
here in sunny California, land of fruits and nuts.
They're suggesting that, you know, what the analysis that I saw today was they suggested that Boxer was safe, but if things continue to get worse, that could change as the year goes on.
Well, I don't think there's any question that it's going to get worse.
Well, I agree.
You know, I mean, I think that's a given. The question is, can she hang on? She cannot get over 45% against any Republican that runs against her.
Well, I think what we need to do is we need to encourage the Congress, the Senate specifically, to take up cap and trade.
Oh, yeah.
Put her front and center.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she's right there in the middle of that one. Well, and you know what?
And then Biden's in trouble. Biden's in trouble if cap and trade gets a hearing in the Senate. Because
yep.
Barbara Boxer actually may take his title of gaffe-prone leader of the free world.
Yeah, she could do that. I mean, you know, particularly on that subject. Which is interesting because President Wee-Wee just came out with, he's going to provide $8 billion of loan guarantees and financing for, wait for it, nuclear power.
In Virginia!
Or Georgia. I think it's Georgia.
Or Georgia. Yeah, sorry. Georgia.
Yeah.
It was a V-A-G-A.
Yeah.
Georgia. What the hell are we putting one in Georgia for?
I don't know. They don't have earthquakes.
My question was, who's going to run it? Is it a Department of Energy plant or is it a private plant? Actually doing, you know, something that's going to be government run.
Oh, really?
Well, you know, you put that much money on the table, you know, there's not strings attached to it. There's, you know, anchor ropes attached to it.
Yeah.
Here.
Let me throw you a lifeline.
Those look like concrete glosses to me. Well, you know.
Yeah,
lifeline.
You're sleeping with the fishes. What can I tell you?
And I actually want to go into Biden just a little bit.
Yeah?
Mr. Gaff and something he said, Scott Brown from Massachusetts just absolutely tore him a new asshole.
Oh, yeah. Ate him up. Had him for lunch.
For those that don't know, our dear vice president suggested that Scott Brown really needed to pay attention to the fact that he didn't have a clue about military legalisms. Not for a second understanding that for the last 30 years, Scott Brown has been a defense lawyer in the military.
Yeah.
Idiot. God.
And in fact, is the highest ranking JAG in his state. He has forgotten more about military law than Joe Biden has ever known.
Scott Brown has forgotten more about his name than Biden has ever
true.
Known.
Oh God! You have to love the gift that keeps on giving there. You know.
He got into a tussle with Cheney.
Yes, he did. Lost that one, too.
I have seen over and over in my life this disconnect with reality.
Yep.
That Democrats are constantly expressing, Victoria, I love her dearly. She is a liberal with a disconnect in reality that is just astounding at times. Astounding. You know, we talked over the weekend about bipartisanship, and she goes, well, you know, the Republicans have been stopping Obama all year long. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah. They can't.
She goes, no filibuster. I said, no filibuster. There's 60 votes, Democrats. Well, Republicans have to vote at least one person.
No.
They don't. There's nothing else. 60 votes, but one of them has to be a Republican. No.
I guess if you're going to claim bipartisanship, yeah, that's probably true.
Even if one Republican did it, the claim of bipartisanship in that situation would be so ludicrous.
Oh,
yeah. To be just disconnected from reality.
Exactly.
And, Biden, with this idea that Iraq is going to be the most successful event of our administration.
Yeah, right.
Over and over again, Obama has said basically the same thing. We're doing the same thing Bush did, only better.
Yeah,
really?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. And the other problem I had this weekend, and it again dealt with Biden only in a peripheral way, and that was the amount of people that were saying that Palin was unqualified to be president.
Oh, again. Again they say that.
Okay, I got two questions.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell me, other than being black and running for president for 6 years, what qualifications does Palin lack?
Exactly.
And, tell me that Palin wouldn't be 1,000 times better as vice president than Joe Biden.
Exactly.
Frankly, I think Sarah Palin's got Joe beat on one and only one place, hands down, that would make her better. Just by itself.
And that is?
She knows when to keep her mouth shut.
Very good.
Because it's pretty certain that Joe Biden has no such governor on his mouth.
No, he doesn't. I mean, he's the mouth of the South. That's kind of the way he is. And we knew that, or everybody that paid attention knew that going in. The guy is just a mouthy guy.
And for the first time in a long time, I'm really pissed at Ann Coulter.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
And she said?
Well, let me lead up to that a little bit.
Okay.
Okay. I'm Irish.
Okay.
First generation born in the United States of Irish parents.
Okay.
Who were born and raised in Ireland of Irish parents. Both sides. Who were born and raised in Ireland, all four sides.
Aha. Uh-huh.
I'm seriously, serious Irish. Okay? And there's an old joke about Irishmen and getting drunk.
There's a number of them, but yes, go ahead.
There's a whole lot of them. There's a number.
Yeah.
Here's the one. How do you know an Irishman is not drunk?
Ooh, is not drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. He's not talking?
No, he can hold on to one blade of grass and not fall off the earth.
Oh, very good.
Got it. I'm on. I'm here. Okay.
Ann
Coulter called Biden a drunken Irishman.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Now, Biden might be a drunken Irishman, but I can tell you that all the Irishmen that I've ever known that have been drunk,
yeah,
none of them talk stupid like that.
Yeah, very good.
Not one of them. And I think Ann Coulter owes a whole lot of drunken Irishmen a really big apology for calling Biden a drunken Irishman. So... that's what I have to say about Ann Coulter. She's the first time she really made me pissed off about it.
Uh-oh. I'm sorry. Jeez.
And
usually,
the other thing was, today was primary day here in Wisconsin.
Oh, really?
There was exactly one race on the ballot for us.
Huh.
So I didn't vote today. The vote was for an appellate court judge. The three candidates were two circuit court judges and the Madison DA.
Okay.
The Madison DA is going to win this thing, like, going away.
Okay.
Now, the only problem I have is, one, he's never been a judge.
Hmm.
And his two opponents are judges.
Huh.
So, you know, it seems to be a consistent thing in this state that the more qualified you are to be a judge, the less likely you are to get elected to be a judge.
I see. Okay.
So, he's going to win it hands down. He's going to win it by somewhere in the vicinity of 70-30.
Oh my gosh!
It's just going to be a walkway. Both of the judges are from very, very small communities in the northwest and the northeast part of the state. Nobody knows him. Everybody knows Blanchard. It's just going to be a walkaway.
Huh. And so, and he's the Madison DA?
He's a Madison DA.
Hmm.
So he's just going to be a walkaway. He's been around for a long time. He's actually not bad. We've dealt with him in the past on a couple cases. When he was in private practice. So, nice guy. I mean, I got nothing against him in general, but this was going to be a hands-down win for him.
I'll be darned.
It's not even going to be competitive. So,
I'll be darned.
But
the judges that are running against him are good judges, bad judges?
Nothing bad that I've heard about either one of them, other than the fact that they are both very small community judges.
I'll be darned.
So,
and this is for
an appellate court judge.
State appellate court judge. You guys elect those?
Yes.
Huh.
We elect all our judges all the way up the board here.
I'll be darned. Okay.
Municipal judges, circuit court judges, appellate court judges, and Supreme Court judges are all elected.
Huh. I guess I'm not sure. I know that municipal and superior court judges are elected in California. I know that Supreme Court judges are either confirmed or denied based on the vote. I'm not sure about appellate court judges. Not sure how they get on there. I may have to look at that.
Tammy, you're not supposed to do that. To
what?
Me.
What did she do?
she sent me a list of everyday English and slang in Ireland.
Oh God. Oh God. Okay.
So, the first one is half a bubble off true. Yeah, not the full shilling. Is it? Is
okay.
it?
Okay.
Oh, I'm going to have fun with this.
Okay.
Oh, don't do that to me, woman. Craziness. All right. For a long time, what was it? I had a, for about 15 years, I had notebooks, and I collected quotes. And it wasn't quotes. You know, it wasn't famous quotes. It was interesting quotes. And, you know, it's the kind of things that you see. You might pop up on Twitter. You go, that's pretty cool, pretty funny. You know, and it was just that. I had notebooks and notebooks of them. And then, I'm certain you don't do now, but you used to read the Wall Street Journal.
I did.
Back in the 70s, United Technologies took out full-page ads.
Yes, they did.
And they ran really, really, really cool ads. Not for their own stuff, but it was, interesting things like, in the last Olympics, the difference between first place and last place was a tenth of a second.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It was just interesting things like that. And I remember I was getting the Wall Street Journal then, and I saved them all.
Oh,
I pulled them out
okay.
of paper and saved them. They're really, really cool. I don't know what happened to them. They're long gone. But there were some really, really interesting things. Things like Sam Houston. There was a thing on Sam Houston, one of them. But I really liked what they had done there. And for a period of time, and I don't know if it was a website, a blog, or it wasn't a blog. It was, I don't know what I was doing with it. But I was posting some of those quotes out of my notebooks.
Okay.
And I you know, maybe we should, maybe I should do that. Maybe I'll come up with, you know, the quote of the day. The quote.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That might be rather interesting. Not necessarily, you know, specific quotes of a conservative nature from the past week, but something that would be consistent with that. And the reason I brought up the voting today was I was also doing my taxes today. I started getting the taxes ready.
Yep.
And really, really, I really, really, really think that whenever anybody has a primary coming up, you know, in their area, the night before the primary, they should sit down and work on their taxes. Let me tell you.
Yeah.
Thinking about voting after working on my taxes this morning. Blanchard's lucky he wasn't running for anything else.
Yeah. Oh boy.
And,
yep.
So many others. Russ Feingold, who is running, going to be up for re-election this year. Has put out a press release complaining that his potential GOP opponent didn't pay any taxes for 2 years around here.
Oh, really?
Now, the guy that is running, his name is Tom Wall. And if you ever come around Madison, you will see all kinds of signs that say T. Wall Properties. He's a major commercial developer in this area. And as he suggested, I didn't hear all of it, but he only paid over those 2 years about $16 million in corporate taxes. He didn't pay any personally because he had invested something like $100 million of his own money into some development projects.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's like, you know, he didn't pay any taxes. His corporations paid a lot of taxes, but he, because, you know, he created some jobs.
Yes, he did.
Thousands of jobs.
Yeah.
So they were laughing
about
Feingold's, you know, creation of about a dozen staff.
All his staff, right?
Staff, all his staff.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, I think it's a really good idea so that you have the right mindset, you know, the night before the primary, sit down and work on your taxes.
There you go.
Want to get that mindset going in there.
Yeah.
And it was, and I had all kinds of problems today on other areas. It was just driving me crazy. This just drove me nuts.
Okay.
And it was, you know, conservative women just pissing me off today.
Uh-oh.
Michelle Malkin said that the only statement of conservative principles we need was the Constitution.
Okay.
And I feel like going, it's a damn framework for a government. What the hell does it have to do with conservative principles? It's not a statement of conservative principles. It is a taking conservative principles and applying it to a government's frame, creation of a government. It's not a statement of conservative principles. It is a statement about how conservative principles would create a government. I have conservative principles that have nothing to do with creating a government.
Okay, I'm listening.
So my argument is that, you know, the Constitution does not give us anything. It doesn't do anything for us other than create government that is supposed to function in a way that we want it to. It doesn't give to us. We give to it. We take our principles and apply it to it. It is not a statement of our principles.
That's an interesting viewpoint.
Tomorrow, a very large group of people, conservatives, are going to get together at Mount Vernon in Virginia.
Yep.
And they're going to sign what is called the Mount Vernon Statement. Apparently, this statement is going to be a statement of conservative principles.
Actually, I think the Mount Vernon Statement came out in 76.
No, you're thinking about the Sharon Statement.
Yes, I am. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. And what I found was kind of interesting is, now let me see if I can pull this back up here. I want this over there. Go put that over there. Now here. That's what I want. The Sharon Statement was signed by, among others, William Buckley Jr. back in the 60s.
Yes.
I have it here, and I'm going to talk about it in a minute. But what I found rather interesting was the group of the people that are going to be, that have helped draft this Mount Vernon Statement, and who will be in attendance.
I saw that.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
And I, of course, you know me, have some concerns. Among others that are going to be there, is Tony Perkins, who is president of Family Research Council and no friend to the gays. Now, I bring this up only because I would suggest, based on some of the other people that are going to be there, is that this is not going to be a classical liberal statement. That this is going to be a mixture of social conservatism and fiscal conservatism. And I might have a problem with that. I might have a problem with that. So I wanted to find out, because they all seem to be rather interested about the Sharon Statement that was adopted back in the 60s. And so I went and looked it up. And there are, in fact, two, you could almost suggest, social conservative points in this statement. Now, I'm going to read the whole thing. It's not that long. It's
okay.
Going to probably take me about 2 minutes to read it, 3 minutes
okay.
to read it. And it was adopted on September 11th, believe it or not, 1960. I quote, "In this time of moral and political crisis, it is the responsibility of the youth of America to affirm certain eternal truths. We, as young conservatives, believe that foremost among the transient values is the individual's use of his God-given free will, whence derives his right to be free from the restrictions of arbitrary force. That liberty is indivisible, and that political freedom cannot long exist without economic freedom. That the purpose of government is to protect those freedoms through the preservation of internal order, the provision of national defense, and the administration of justice. That when government ventures beyond these rightful functions, it accumulates power, which tends to diminish order and liberty. That the Constitution of the United States is the best arrangement yet devised for empowering government to fulfill its proper role while restraining it from the concentration and abuse of power. That the genius of the Constitution, the division of powers, is summed up in the clause that reserves primacy to the several states or to the people in those spheres not specifically delegated to the federal government, obviously the Tenth Amendment. That the market economy, allocating resources by the free play of supply and demand, is the single economic system compatible with the requirements of personal freedom and constitutional government, and that it is at the same time the most productive supplier of human needs. That when government interferes with the work of the market economy, it tends to reduce the moral and physical strength of the nation, that when it takes from one man to bestow on another, it diminishes the incentive of the first, the integrity of the second, and the moral autonomy of both. Shades of Jefferson there.
Mm-hmm.
That we will be free only so long as the national sovereignty of the United States is secure. That history shows periods of freedom are rare and can only exist when free citizens concertedly defend their rights against all enemies. That the forces of international communism are, at present, the greatest single threat to these liberties. That the United States should stress victory over, rather than coexistence with, this menace. And that American foreign policy must be judged by this criteria. Does it serve the just interests of the United States? Now, unquote. There is no social or moralistic statements in that entire thing. It is how the government should function in a just society. How we as citizens should function in that society. But
okay.
I find it interesting that there are this, I have no problem with this statement at all. Not a single solitary individual little piece of it. I could sign this in a heartbeat. But I bet I'm going to have a bigger problem tomorrow. So, I'm concerned. I am concerned. What will the Mount Vernon statement there? And of course, nobody has seen it. God knows I've tried to dig up somewhere, someone having something about it, but they've kept it extremely quiet.
Yeah. Yep, yep, yep.
So, I just I'm looking at the list of the people, some of the people that are going to be down there, and, one of the things, these are some of the things. The statement is written in bold but rather general terms, citing how America's principles have been undermined and redefined in our culture, our university, and our politics. The statement decries the federal government ignoring the limits of the Constitution. It then calls for a change consistent with the American ideal, which it defines as a restatement of the constitutional conservatism grounded in the priceless principle of ordered liberty articulated in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. See, I got a problem with that.
Well, your problem is different than my problem.
Okay.
My problem is, I didn't see one Tea Party or name on there.
Definitely not.
Nope. Didn't see a one. And I'm sitting there thinking, so who all drawed all this up stuff? Who was that? Was that somebody that has the best interest of the conservatives in mind?
Or the Republicans.
Exactly. And I'm unclear.
As to what that means, the statement goes on to state that the conservatism in the Declaration asserts self-evident truths based on the laws of nature and nature's God. Where did we hear that phrase before?
That's in the Declaration of Independence.
No. No.
Yeah.
No. No. We were talking about natural law 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay. All right.
you and I, we didn't get into it really big. We did talk about it in the green room afterwards considerably more. You know, and we were talking about the laws of nature and nature's God.
Well, but that is in fact found in the Declaration of
Declaration of Independence.
Actually, I don't think it's Declaration of Independence. Well, it might be.
Let's see how fast I can find this. I think I'm pretty fast.
You're pretty quick.
I'm pretty fast. Let me see if I can find. Find. Go on. There we go. Nature's. Here's where it says. When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands that which have connected them with one another and to assume the powers of Earth, the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitled them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to that separation. So, in the opening statement, before we get down to we hold these truths to be self-evident, it says that we are assuming the powers of the earth, the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitled them. Natural law.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only going to do this for about 3 minutes.
Okay.
Because if somebody wants to get into this, we can get into this on an entire show. But I think we would want to be in a situation where we have some time to work on it. I would certainly want to have a fair amount of, you know, documentation and questions and such that in front of me. The problem with nature is that it is a cruel and beastie monster where it knows no bounds, where it has no morality. It simply takes and gives according to strength. And we, as human beings, are better than that.
Okay.
We do not eat our young. We may beat them on occasion, but we do not eat them.
Yeah, that's true.
We do not abandon them when they are broken.
Yeah.
We are better than nature.
Tracy, all that's true. All of that is true. But I think that you're trying to conflate the animal kingdom's nature's law and what our founding fathers meant when they said nature's law. And I'm not sure that they're the same.
I agree.
Okay.
That they are equating, they wanted to avoid the idea of a specific religious God, but yet acknowledge that in fact there is a creator, to which they attribute the characteristics of God, the name of God.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. They didn't want to say the Christian God, or the Jewish God,
right,
or Allah. They just want to say that, you know, the creator of the universe, which all religions will call God, even if that meant all kinds of different things in different religions. The assumption is that God is God. We all have our own ways of dealing with how that gets manifest in our lives and in our religions, but God is God. And I think when they said nature's God, that's what they're trying to do, was to avoid a specific religious God, but simply acknowledging that the universe that created artifact was created by God.
Okay.
I think that's consistent with positions that you have had and have voiced to me over the time
mm-hmm.
we've been on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily have a whole lot of problem with that. Until some interpretation thereof starts changing things. I will wait. I will not condemn the Mount Vernon statement until I've had a chance to read it.
Exactly, yeah.
But at this particular point in time, I'm kind of concerned about what it might, in fact,
say. Yep. Well, I think that there's a lot of people that are going to be looking at that fairly critically, saying, okay, exactly what is it that you people are saying? And rightfully so. I mean, I don't have a problem with somebody saying, hey, here's what we think. I don't even have a problem with a group getting together and saying, we believe that these statements adequately reflect the state of conservatism today. I mean, that's certainly their prerogative. They can do that. I do have a problem if they say, here is our statement, and if you are a conservative, you will believe in each and every one of these things. Now I got a problem.
Yeah.
Because that may not be true.
And it's likely not to be true.
Likely. Unless they keep it so generic that it probably doesn't mean a lot.
You know, the Sharon statement was not generic, I don't think. I think the Sharon statement was actually pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it was pretty focused on the political realm.
Yes, it was.
And one of the things that I've been thinking about over the last couple months is, you know, exactly where in our lives do my conservative principles, you know, get reflected? Other than in the political realm. And some of those places are how I give money to organizations.
Mm-hmm.
What, if any, money I do, and to what organizations, for what purpose. I'm going to support those organizations that reflect my desire for individual liberties and individual freedoms, and that those that support those things. Obviously, I'm not going to give money to PETA.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to give money to MoveOn.org, although that tends to be more political. I'm
mm-hmm.
not going to give money to organizations that support unionization.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I disagree with those with unionization.
Right.
Generally anywhere and across the board.
Yeah.
So there are places where my principles exist in our family's day-to-day lives. It's not political. It functions in a fiscal environment in the economy and such more often than not. It operates in my support for my nephew and my niece and her husband,
mm-hmm.
For our troops. We were informed this evening that a good friend of ours, their 16-year-old son, has stated quite clearly that he's going into the Army after high school.
Wow. Good for him.
His parents are absolutely thrilled. Solid conservatives both. His grandparents, on the other hand, who are raging liberals, have
yeah.
absolutely gone bonker shit. So we had a little bit of a chance to discuss that this evening. That was part of one order.
oh, well.
So I just find it rather interesting that, you know, there are places where our conservative principles are reflected in our daily lives in non-political ways. And that is where I got into this problem that the Constitution is the only statement of conservative principles that we need. Because it's not. The Constitution is just a political manifestation of those conservative principles. The Constitution does not define conservative principles. It's created by them. Those principles exist prior to the Constitution existing. They're putting the cart before the horse here, and I think it's just inconsistent. And it comes back down to people that continue to say the Constitution gives us the right to, which drives me batshit.
No.
I expect that out of the left. I really do expect it out of the left. I expect it out of most people that are not paying a whole lot of attention to what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're all they're relying on is their high school history lessons about the Constitution, they're going to sit there and say, well, the Bill of Rights gives us all the, you know, is a Bill of Rights. It's a right. No. You know, I understand that that's what you think and that's kind of what we were taught, you know, but, you know, the Bill of Rights does not give us any rights. Okay, the Constitution does not give us rights.
I agree.
I know you agree.
But well, because it doesn't. I mean, and any in-depth reading of the Constitution is going to point that out pretty quickly. You know, here's my problem. My problem is that when we do not adequately talk about what are the basis of those rights, then we have done a disservice to those people that come after us. And frankly, I'm not sure that not paying attention to that does us any favors at all.
Right. It's gotten to the point where whenever somebody brings that up, I jump all over it. And somebody says, "Why do you always jump all over that?" Because we as a active participants in this process of running our country cannot let that mistake continue to be perpetuated.
Exactly. I mean, and let me give you a concrete example of that. Today on the blogosphere, there were a couple of articles about indefinite detention. And that unfortunately was brought up in the context of civilian indefinite detention. Now, military indefinite detention we have had since George Washington. That is a tested, time-tested, true thing. We have had that. It has always been ruled legal. When you start talking about indefinite detention on the civilian side, you start running into major problems. Right now it's being talked about in terms of terrorists. I'm sorry. I don't know what the politically correct term for them are now. But I can also tell you that I know of at least two states and probably more that are talking about civilian indefinite detention for rapists, child molesters. So then the question becomes, well, where do you draw that line? Are we going to get down to indefinite detention for shoplifters? How about forgers?
Especially with the recidivism rate that's more than 20%.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we have a notion in this country that on the civilian side, you are innocent until proven guilty. That's a good thing. I sometimes don't like the result it gives, but it's still a good thing. We have a position that if you were an unlawful combatant, if you were a POW, if you were a nation at war with the United States, you could be detained indefinitely until the conclusion of that war. Those two things did not mix. One was purely a military thing. The other was purely a civilian thing. Whenever the civilian authorities start talking about indefinite detention, makes me nervous. Extremely nervous.
And especially, well,
I mean, you know, yeah, we can all agree that terrorists ought to be indefinitely detained. The problem is when you go beyond that. And once you start down that slope, once you make that decision, and once you have put that precedence into play, you don't have any good places to go. And then it becomes a political tool.
Currently being played very much on the left.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But, I mean, it can be played on the right.
Sure enough.
It could be.
Sure enough.
I'm sitting here saying, nope, I don't want to hear any talk about that whatsoever. You do a civilian crime, you pay that price, you get caught, you get convicted, you do your time, you're done. Period. End of story.
I agree.
Yeah.
I'm going to change things. We only got a couple minutes left, and I want to get a couple of easy things out of the way.
Cool.
Global warming.
Oh, Jesus.
Is there anything left?
Oh, God, I don't think so. Jesus.
You know, the only thing I got left to say about this, and I think everybody pretty much agrees with the idea, is that, you know, when science gets involved in politics and policies, you know, there's just not a good mix. And all I could think of today was, you know, government as a cheerleader, not a quarterback.
There you go. Yep.
I don't have any problem with government funding lots of basic science research.
Absolutely.
Okay. I think it's a perfectly good idea. I don't have any problems with it. You know, it benefits this country in more ways than I can consider. If anybody ever wants to talk to me about DBDR, which is my plan for a large-scale laboratory setting, doing large amounts of basic research, and how to be organized. I have a wonderful idea about it. It's called DBDR.
Cool.
And
my only caveat is it ought to be state-funded. But that's okay. Go ahead.
It's not government-funded at all.
Ah, cool.
It's not designed to be government-funded at all.
Cool.
But, yeah, this idea, it's got to be, you know, government is a cheerleader, not a participant.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Not a player. Have you gotten any Olympic fever? Gotten into any at all?
Have I gotten what?
Olympic fever. You've been watching the Olympics?
Oh, actually, I have been. Yeah, yeah. You betcha.
We were able to spend a little bit of time watching our favorite today.
Which was?
Curling.
Oh, all right.
Yes.
And who came out on top?
30 seconds. Go ahead and give your shots out. I'm going to say one thing to Pammy. Pammy, no, I really liked what you said. Thank you very much.
Mama Gurkha and Just Me Pammy and Arkansas Traveler, thank you so much for listening, and we appreciate it.
And Louise Ma, coming in late, thank you very much.
Oh, yeah, she's there now. Cool.
You know, go back and watch the Olympics. Pursuit, snowboard pursuit, ski jumping, and short track have been decided to be all favorites. this time around.
Cool.
Everyone else, we'll talk to you next week. Bill, I'll see you in a second.
You betcha.
Green Room time. Hello, people.
Hey,
hey,
folks.
Podcast.
Uh-huh.
I did want to spend a little more time about the Olympics. Do you know what a snowboard pursuit is?
Not really.
It was exhibition event last time around. This time it's a medal event.
Uh-huh.
And what it is it's snowboarders chasing each other down a hill.
Well,
and
that's good.
There's jumps and curves, and they usually send them down four at a time. First one to the bottom wins.
Whoa, okay.
And
that's like a real race.
Yeah, it's a race. It's absolutely a race. They all start off side by side, and first one to the bottom wins the heat, and they do several heats and semifinals and quarterfinals, and then
mm-hmm.
you know the final things.
There you go.
It was on yesterday. I didn't get a chance to watch it because I was working, but I really like it. Pursuit's pretty cool. We did see short track on Sunday, which was really great. CJ has decided she really likes short track.
Oh, really?
Really likes short track. She says it's really exciting. So,
cool.
Short track is pretty good. And I like ski jumping.
Yeah.
And I did watch the Nordic Combined, which I find to be rather interesting. I hate cross-country skiing. I think it's boring.
Yeah.
But the Nordic Combined...
Well, except that I kind of like the biathlon.
Right. The biathlon is cool.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, anything that shoots is usually pretty good in my book.
Yeah.
So, I'm pretty happy with that kind of stuff. We'll watch some more of that coming up. Everybody's into figure skating. I don't really care about the figure skating.
I mean, we've got it on right now, but it's not.
I like the luge. So obviously I like the bobsleds.
Yep.
I get into the bobsledding. That's pretty cool. It always makes me think of, running, a red flyer down the street.
Yeah.
those big old bobsleds make so much noise as they rack around and stuff like that. It's just like, I just think it's kind of interesting as hell.
Yep. I like them too.
Speed, obviously. I'll be looking forward to downhill next week. That'll be fun to watch. I'm always a big fan of downhill. And there'll be more short track and speed skating. So, I really like the Olympics. I'm a much bigger fan of the Winter Olympics than I am the Summer Olympics.
Yeah. Yep.
So,
I agree. Yep.
We've got a little bit of Olympic fever here, and the nice thing is, as I suggested, although I was busy last week and over the weekend with cases, it's actually quiet right now.
Cool.
I'm actually going to be able to get a couple, couple days worth of other things done going here. That's fine. I've had a busy 3 or 4 weeks, so a little bit of back off is just fine for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
especially I got a new client last week, so she gave me a bunch of work to do, so that was nice.
Uh-oh. Yep.
What was the other thing? I did want, the global warming thing has just gone crazy.
Oh, yeah.
There is nothing left.
Except they keep talking about their crazy stuff going on with that, and it's just, so frustrating. I mean, it really is.
I was reading something today, and they're perfectly right. About all of them saying, the reason we've got all these snow is because global warming is adding lots more moisture to the air, so we're going to get a lot bigger storms.
Right. Okay.
Well, hey, that's perfectly correct. Global warming would suggest that there would be higher concentrations of moisture in the air. Therefore, we would have more precipitation. perfectly correct. I mean, everything that I've read, that I understand about the mechanics of our atmosphere, is that warmer air holds more moisture.
Okay.
Except one little thing.
Uh-huh.
In order to get snow, it has to be cold!
Gee, you noticed that. Okay.
Otherwise, we get rain!
Yeah, yeah, I know. I'm actually, you know what? What was it? One of the Great Lakes froze over.
Erie.
Erie
froze over.
Yeah.
Erie froze
That's
over.
Erie.
And, of course, for the first time in a very long time, I think it was like 1976 or 75, something like that, all 50 states have snow in them.
Yep.
All 50 states have snow on the ground.
It's just like, okay, when do you guys cry, Uncle?
Phil Jones did last week. Thank you very much, Phil.
Yeah, he did. Oh, God. I don't know.
I want Michael Mann to cry uncle.
Yeah.
I'll consider global warming dead when Michael Mann concedes what Phil Jones conceded.
Yeah.
That's
actually, I want Michael Moore to concede.
Okay. You're going to grow old and die.
Yes, I will.
CJ is going to grow old and die before that happens.
Yeah, I know. Hey, I can wish. It's like okay.
You're gonna get that wish about the same time Al Gore is going to do it.
Yeah, probably. That part would not surprise me at all. You know, he just. They just don't know when to say when.
Well, it's kind of like Sarah Palin, you know. She knows when to shut up!
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know. It's crazy. I mean, it is crazy. It doesn't make any sense at all at this point to continue on with what they're doing.
Well,
but
you know,
they're doing it anyway.
Apparently, this is a genetic trait for liberals. Okay?
Apparently.
When you're in a hole and somebody offers you a ladder or a shovel,
yeah,
they take the shovel every time.
On that, too. It isn't just global warming, God. The war on poverty. I mean, that's been around since, what, 67, something like that. How many trillion dollars have we wasted on this? War on poverty going.
Let's introduce a little bit of the difference of opinion between us.
Okay.
Okay. You and I have never talked about this, I don't think, but it was something that was coming up today, something else that I had read. You know, it's the same as the war on drugs.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a big problem with the war on drugs.
Okay.
Because, you know, we have two drugs that are out there that are currently on the market and perfectly legal to have that
mm-hmm.
are extremely destructive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And people... But we've decided that we're going to let people do that significant damage to themselves as long as it doesn't have an impact on others, such as drinking and driving. Public intoxication.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, but we've decided we're going to allow people, if they want to get themselves shit-faced drunk in their own house, that they're going to be allowed to do that. I have the same issue, although I give the people that smoke marijuana 9 miles of shit about it.
Yeah.
If people want to smoke marijuana, can get shit-faced in their house, I think that'd be perfectly fine if, in fact, the damn stuff was legal. It's not, so then don't do it.
Yeah.
Okay? Right now, it's not legal, and just because you think it should be, and just because I think it should be, doesn't mean the fact that you can do it just because we do. We happen to think so. It's not,
mm-hmm.
so don't.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Yep.
The question would be, of course,
actually, you and I don't have that to get any place.
Well, and you know what? The problem is the people that would be most amenable to that point of view are the ones least amenable to that point of view.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, if I sat there and said, you know what? If you want to get high, go right ahead and get high.
Yep.
If you fuck up your life, don't come crawling to me.
Exactly. Exactly.
Of course, the liberals go, oh, they screwed up their life. You have to help them. Bullshit.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I do not.
Not
go
me.
Away.
I just, God.
So.
Yeah, I know.
You're right. Basically, you know, if people want to take drugs, if they want to get shit-faced, you know, stoned out of their gourds, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I don't have any problem with that.
Nope.
When you step out into the world and you start impacting other people, I got a problem with that.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, but at this particular point in time, I don't agree that you should be allowed to do that at home because, in fact, it's currently illegal. And therefore, you know, a problem. Now, in my life, and all the people that I know, okay, I'm not going to count you in this because I don't know you that well.
Okay.
And I'm not going to make you, yes, I will put you on the spot, but in a moment. Of all the people that I know in my life, okay, I know of three people that have never smoked marijuana.
Hmm.
Three.
Wow.
CJ is 15.
Okay.
My mother is 75.
Oh, boy.
Okay. And me. That's it.
Wow. It makes... How to say that? It makes sense only from the standpoint of I want to make a statement. That's all. Doesn't make any kind of sense other than I want to make a statement. And if you're saying I want to make a statement, then that's fine. I mean, I don't have any view that you. Actually, it's given that we have gotten away from weeding out the gene pool, that's probably as good a way to do it as any.
I think we should. I wonder how much it would cost.
What?
To actually monetize the Darwin Award.
Ooh. Hmm.
In other words, we're going to pay off your family if you have effectively removed yourself from the gene pool. Is that asking? Is that just begging for people to do that?
Well, sure, because you got moral hazard.
I'm contributing to
the Darwin Award.
No. Yeah, I understand that. But what moral hazard do you think I'm contributing to?
Okay. Well, then just stop and be quiet, and I'll tell you.
Okay.
The moral hazard is this: take somebody that, through no fault of their own, is in dire straits. And he has an opportunity, or she has an opportunity, to collect 100.
If you think that, you know, killing yourself is a good idea for your family,
mm-hmm.
duh, kind of definition is stupid.
No. I will not accept that premise.
And two,
okay,
if you have a family, then in fact, you haven't taken yourself out of the gene pool. Too late.
Oh, well, then you can't award the damn thing. If there's no family left to give the money to, how do you award it?
You give it to the parents.
Oh, well, they're dead.
Then you give it to the siblings, hoping that, you know, they have learned from their siblings' mistakes.
And they say, thank you, sibling. We appreciate what you did for us.
That's right.
No.
And, you know, therefore, the weaker of the gene pool, you know, gets weeded out. I'm seeing when we look at people going, okay, you're giving people way too much credit.
Maybe so. I don't know.
Because there's a shitload of stupid people out there. And, you know, we've got a couple in running this country as we speak. Well,
that's true. If I could assure that it was Joe or Barack, yeah, okay, that's fine. I'm right there with you.
Too late. They were already added to the gene pool. They don't qualify.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Dang.
Okay. Ooh. I wonder if we can entice this person to join on the Darwin Award.
Man, it sounds like they need to.
Sounds like they're already qualified.
Criteria? Yeah, I mean, what's the criteria here? Geez, better, worse than Joe? God, I don't think so. He'll probably come back with that dumb, oh, I can see Russia from my house thing. That was Tina Fey, not her, but that's okay.
Oh, you know, Victoria has told me she has found it online where Sarah Palin said that before Tina Fey did.
Really?
And I said, show me.
Yep.
Show me.
Yeah, that's right.
Because Tina Fey said it. Everyone knows that Tina Fey said it.
Yep.
No one believes that Sarah Palin said it. Except for...
Nobody on the right does.
You. So, anyways. We've had that one at least three times in the last year.
She did say that she could see Russia from one of the Alaskan islands.
That's right.
Which was the whole basis for that.
That's
that
right.
Shtick.
Yes,
but that's a totally different thing. Yep. Alrighty.
Alright. I'm done. I had nothing else for this one today.
Yep, I'm pretty much done too, I think. I'm gonna go watch myself some Olympics. And then see what happens.
I'm going to go find out how the women did on curling today.
Cool. All righty. Hey, tweet the results of that. Because I didn't even know curling was on. I didn't get to see any part of that.
Usually it's on in the middle of the night.
Well, I don't know how they're doing their thing, but I do know that they are only showing the things that they think are going to get the ratings for them. Because I haven't seen, for instance, I haven't seen any curling. I didn't see the snowboard check.